Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at those times, the podcasts. Oh, yes, those blessed podcasts are available to you in a myriad of locations, and they are not only the radio show's page of richarddugan.com, but also on the homepage, as well as SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, and we are looking to expand that here in 2019, so we hope that you will avail yourselves of the podcasts, and we also link to our guests. By the way, when you're looking at the SoundCloud podcast and you're listening to an interview and you see that little grocery cart up there in the upper right-hand corner, that will take you to our guest's website. Now, on the homepage, you will see that. On the radio show's page, you click on our guest's name and it takes you to that guest's website. So we encourage you to investigate. We're going to be giving you that website for our guest here shortly, and we certainly hope that you will do that. Also, we'd love to hear from you if you have any ideas, comments, suggestions, even criticisms. You know, it's there's always room for improvement. That's why we're doing this program. That's what, I hate to say this, but to some, that's what evolution is all about, is improving on the existing model, so to speak, or innovating and so forth. And that's what we do in business, in our relationships, at home, when we make modifications to this, that, or the other, and so on and so forth. So we encourage you to continue that process. And if you'd like to support this radio broadcast, we are always open to that. We have a PayPal account that's set up so that you can support what we are doing. If you like what we're doing, if it resonates with you and you'd like to support us in large or small ways, we would greatly appreciate that. Just go to the link. It's also on the homepage as well as the missions page. If this is the first time you've listened to this broadcast, go to the missions page and read what we're all about. And listen to some of the interviews as well as obviously this one, and continue your evolutionary process and support us in any way you can. We'll even take energetic support as well. And bit of a reminder that if you're listening to the radio version, you're only going to get 50 minutes. So go to the podcast and listen to the entire interview. Sometimes we go 60, 70, 80. You know, it just depends upon the availability of our guest. And speaking of our guest, the availability is with us here on the program as we're going to hear about a rather remarkable story, a woman's story here. And it's a tale of love, loss, survival, and healing. And we're going to find out more about that as well as the three-book series, if you will, The Truth, My Journey to the Other Side. That, by the way, happens to be book one. Book two is, again, The Truth, is The Art of Being. And then we have book three, which is Within the Heart of Love. And my guest is Dee Delaney. And we're talking to you halfway round the world. You're all the way in India. Originally, though, you're from the UK. Am I correct?
I am. And it's strange. I love the way this works because it's 13 and a half hours and we're kind of crossing over days almost here in India. I'm at the end of my day and you're at the beginning of yours, which is, I think, rather remarkable, really. But here we are together. So I am originally from the UK, just from outside London. But as you explained in the brief introduction with my books, I ended up living in Goa, which is in southern India, because I suffered a lot of loss in my life. I had three partners, three dear men in my life, all in their 40s, passed away. My first partner, who was the father to my daughter, Martin, he died of a suicide in 2009. And then my husband, who I was married to, his name was Tony, and he is the father to my son. He dropped down dead suddenly of a heart attack in 2010. And then the story continues. A third partner, who I had a child in spirit with, died in 2014. And so by the time I ended up in India, my visits at one Christmas in 2015, I had this burning questions to ask about what on earth was going on in my life that made so much death be present with my story. I just couldn't seem to escape death. And then I came to India, and a girl, a young British backpacker, was brutally murdered in our community. And it's such a beautiful, peaceful place where I live. And suddenly I was faced with this question of why was death following me around? And it brought me really into the heart and soul of who I am, and asked me to question what my soul purpose was, and brought me to these books that we talked about, this body of work that was called The Truth Is Within. And there was something inside me that was able and gifted to sit with death, to be able to pass people over, which was something that was buried deep inside me and came from the lineage that I was connected to, but something that I had run away from all my life because, like many people, I was scared of death. I was scared of that part of the process and cycle of our life. And although from a very young age I was clairvoyant and I could see things that go bump in the night, mm-hmm. and I could sense spirit on the other side of the veil, but I just wanted to turn away and run from it all. But after losing three partners and this dear, beautiful young girl, Danielle, who was brutally murdered, there was no more running. I promised it to honor her. I promised I had to go into this story and find out about death and about life and share it with the world.
So what is it that you actually found out?
Gosh, that death itself is a natural part of life. And, you know, we are elemental beings. We are made of the earth and the fire and the water and the air, that the whole planet is made of too, and that we come into this world through the heart, from the essence of the mother and the father. Mother, the red essence of the mother represents Mother Earth, and the white essence of the father represents Father Sky. So this coming together of heaven and earth into the heart. And when we die, we leave in exactly the same way. The last part of the death process, the internal dissolution, after we're actually clinically proven to be dead, takes another 20 minutes. And when we leave the body, the mother and father essence, the chains around the heart fly open, and the mother and father essence leave the body in the same way that we come. So the heart is the gateway to all life, and it contains the wisdom of the cosmos. And as souls, we are eternal, you know, our spirit. So when we die, I think a lot of people don't realize when we die, the spirit and the soul leave the body like the threads of DNA, you know, the threads of DNA that wind around each other in that spiral. And our spirit is the imprint of who we are in this life. So Dee Delaney, Richard Duggan, this is who you are. And that exists forever and a day, because the act of dying itself creates an energy, and energy always lives on. So that's how we can contact our ancestors and tune in to spirits in the spirit world. But the soul travels on, and the soul has many, many, many lives, which is why when we say on earth, oh, he's a young soul or she's an old soul, because many of us have been around the moon, you know, hundreds of times. We've lived and lived and lived many, many, many times. And so there is nothing to fear through death. There's nothing to fear. It's a natural evolution of who we are and our soul's progress. But unfortunately, because we're so far removed from this natural, very real, rich process, we've become so scared and we've become frightened of the act of dying because we've become so removed from nature itself, and we forget that we are part of this beautiful cycle of life and birth and life and death and rebirth. And we forget that and we just focus on the bit of us that's here now, but that's just a flicker in the great big landscape of who we really are. It's literally just a, you know, a minute element of, you know, actually the vastness of our soul.
Well, I have to say that there's a very funny a program that I used to watch a lot. It was on back in the 1970s, and the main character had a near-death experience. He nearly died, at least from his perspective. He walked into an elevator shaft, but there was no car there, so he clung for a long time to the cables, right? Well, yeah. He goes through the whole thing, you know, and talking about the Grim Reaper and, you know, Father Death and all these kinds of different things, and it's a humorous program. And later in the episode, he and his wife, they're laying there in bed, and he's going on and on about all of this. And his wife is trying to console him, and she's, but Bob, life, it's just a part of death. And he says in his scared and annoyed voice, yeah, it's the last part. And that's unfortunately what
we
think.
But it's not, it's just the beginning. Yeah. I think that's the point. And you know, that's really interesting. So this near-death experience, so how we perceive death is all in the mind, and we die in the same manner to which we live. So if we live lives that are full of regret and fear, we will bring that regret and fear to our deathbed. But if we live a life of joy and peace and love, when we come to that moment of dying, there is nothing to fear. And we know that because we understand that it's all in the mind. And so there's many I talk about in my second book, The Truth is the Art of Being. I recall some near-death experiences that I've witnessed with somebody. And also I talk about some books where there's a young girl who has killed herself, and she's contacted by the author in the afterlife. And, you know, when we die, we kind of we all have this similar experience. We go into this tunnel of light, and we're met normally by our ancestors or beings of light who help us on our way. There are people there to help us journey through. But if we have so much fear in our hearts, then we take that into the afterlife. It's the Tibetans call it the bardo, the in-between rebirth. And we can actually be in this state for up to 49 days. And how we experience that realm, if you like, really depends on, you know, how we are at death, but also the life we've had before. So my mission and the soul midwives who I've trained with is to be able to give people a peaceful, beautiful death, and to look after the soul as it transitions from one body into the afterlife, because the dead can hear. So when we leave our physical bodies, our consciousness, our soul, you know, the spark of divine light that we are, that lives on, and that still is present, very much connected, especially in the first week after death. It often can be confused if it's been a traumatic death or a sudden death, and can cling to the body. So you know, that the essence of that person, which is the bit that we love, can hear us. So a lot of the practices, the ancient practices of the Tibetans and the shamans and people who are still connected to the ancient wisdoms of the past, is about staying with the body for at least 3 days talking to the body, guiding the soul of the body on. It's beautiful, and there's nothing to be frightened of, and it's really nurturing to experience that. But unfortunately, you know, I come from the West, where a lot of people die on their own in hospital beds, surrounded by machinery and bright lights, and they're frightened. And nobody should go through that. You know, just as when we bring life into the world, we want it to be a beautiful, nurturing experience. You know, when we leave the world, that's why we're called soul midwives. We're midwifing. We're offering the soul into the next life. We're holding the soul's hand to say there's nothing to be scared.
Now, I've been through a a process having to do with what's called LBL, Life Between Lives. And it was really fascinating to experience this, especially because of the insights that I received regarding my just past life. In other words, the one right before this one, which when I look back on that, I'm going, I'd actually like to go back to that one. I'd like to relive that one, you know. And there are those who say, well, you know, it is possible because all of these lives, they're all happening at the same time. And, you know, only the human mind creates a linear timeline, but everything is always happening all at the same time. And which is, you know, that's like trying to encompass infinity. You know, it's trying to wrap your brain around infinity.
That's a really valid point what you make there, mm-hmm. because with that knowledge, we are able to heal the wounds of the past. Because when we know that space, time, and everything is only happening now, mm-hmm. that means all the previous lives we have been and that have walked before us, and all those wounds are available for us to go back and heal. And thank you for saying that, because it's such an important point that once we're aware of that, we can, in the present moment, heal the wounds of our past by going into our hearts, reconnecting to that energy that is ever present, and remothering and reloving and transmuting that pain to love so it no longer exists. That's the beauty of not understanding this space-time dynamic. We are all able to go back in time and nurture ourselves and heal our wounds.
And I think that's one of the difficulties that we have in this time and in this life that we're living right now, you, Dee, me, Richard, is that we have to be, first of all, open to accepting at least the possibility, if not the reality, that we actually have lived other lives in order to begin that particular process. Now, I also am reading another book that I've had since I was 21. It was given to me by a dear friend of mine on my, I think it was either my 21st birthday or it was for Christmas. I can't remember exactly. But nonetheless, the book is called The Impersonal Life. And in there, it actually addresses this subject of previous lives or reincarnation.
This is the book that, sorry to interrupt, isn't this the book that Elvis always had with him?
You know, I don't know.
The Impersonal Life.
The Impersonal Life, I'm not sure.
James, I've read it, actually. It's a really small book.
A very small book. And mine is...
Yes, I have read it. It's a beautiful book.
Well, in there, it talks about this whole concept it's as if God is speaking to you. In other words, it was written from that context, that the divine is talking to you, the reader. And it's saying, you know, you have this concept of reincarnation, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, that's all fine, well, and good. However, the truth is that you have not lived other lives, that all of these other lives that have been lived in your linear past are nothing more than manifestations of me, and that when you tap into one of these lives, you're just tapping into me. And I pondered that for a while, trying to balance that between the concept, the philosophy of reincarnation, and I'm thinking that doesn't change anything, because what you just said in summation is the whole purpose of going back to those lives, whether we lived them or we're just tapping into them, is to learn lessons and heal so that we can, in this lifetime, move forward, right?
Yeah. And not just for ourselves, for others, because if we understand that we're all part of this great, big, massive cosmic soup, mm-hmm. and which we are, then we're all in it together. And when you evolve and when I evolve, we help each other because we're all connected. So it's not, you know, I used to sit there when I first started on this journey, when I first trained as a yoga teacher. I trained in a Tibetan center in London, and the Lama, the female head lady, nun, she'd spent 3 rounds of 3 years sitting in a cave meditating. And at the time, I used to think, how selfish is that? What on earth? How is she helping the world just by sitting in a cave? I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. But now I understand that by her devoting all that time to cleaning out her samsaras, all her negativity, which is what meditation does for us. It sends us back and we transcend all the negativity and we get to this point of bliss. But by her doing that and raising her vibration, she was contributing to the collective consciousness of the earth. And by her selflessly giving her time, she was raising the vibration for us all, bit by bit.
Yeah, I've heard it said.
And, I think that's the magic of this connection. I've start with my third book, which is called The Truth Within the Heart of Love. I actually look at the science of the God theory, mm-hmm. which is I start to look at quantum mechanics and Newton's theories and Einstein's theories of relativity and Newton's gravity and how it all meshes together and what are black holes and the whole nine yards. And they all say the same thing. They all are saying the same thing, that we come from this one source, singularity, unification, divine spark, collective consciousness, God, goddess, whatever you like to call it. Mm-hmm. But we all come from and go back to the same thing. And philosophy, religion, and science are all saying the same thing. Science can't yet prove it. They can prove it mathematically in string theory, but they can't prove it through experiment. Philosophy says it through beautiful words and poems, but one needs belief. And religion says it through God, you know. But ultimately, we are all expressions of this divine source. And we always will be. And that's the mystery of life. And ours is not to try to crack the code.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it wouldn't be a mystery.
Well, and
it?
But of course, there are those who claim that they have because they take their philosophy so literally and so, I'm going to say zealously, if you will, or passionately,
yeah.
Maybe being kinder would be, they take it so passionately and then they try to cajole, convince, coerce, whatever the phrase you want to use, everyone else into believing and thinking that their way is the only way.
Because that's because they're split from source.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're split from source, you're divided already.
Yeah.
You know, source is love. God is love. You know, we all, you know, every single religious scripture will come back to the same thing, that actually God is an expression of love and we are all that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you divide from that, you're no longer love. And I think the reason why people fight so fiercely to be heard is because they're split from love. Because love has no boundaries. Love is not divided from anything. Love is, we don't even know the depths of what love is because it's beyond words, isn't it? It's none of us can put into words or music or expression, or we just can't. That's because it's untouchable.
Yeah.
And it is. There's no other way to describe that. I don't know. Do you have another way to describe it?
No, I don't. By the way, if you've just joined us, we're talking to Dee Delaney all the way from India via Skype, and you're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I did talk with, to answer your question, sort of, I was talking with a physicist who wrote a book called The Fifth Dimension, and it was rather philosophical. And he says, I can prove to you the existence of the first and the second and the third dimensions, height, width, depth, okay? I can prove to you the existence of those three dimensions. The fourth dimension of time, he says, I can't prove to you that it exists, but I can show you examples of its reality, shall we say, in our world, time. Mm. And then he went on to explain, from his perspective, the fifth dimension. And I listened very intently as we were walking back from lunch one day. And I stopped him and I said, you know, I've been researching this stuff for a lot of years. I worked for a Christian radio station. I've been a metaphysician since I was 17. And I'm going to tell you that based upon what you just told me about what the fifth dimension is, there's only one word that I can come up with that would even come close to explaining what you just described, and that's God.
Yeah.
The divine. The force, if you will, kind of thing. And he says, he's a physicist. He's a scientist. And he came to the same conclusion. It was amazing.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful, because I think I call it the three tenets of truth. You know, it's the Trinity, it's philosophy, religion or spirituality, and science. They're all searching. I call it the holy grail of science, the God theory. Mm. They've been, since Einstein, Stevens, Hawking, they've all been searching for the answer, haven't they?
Yeah.
Where did we come from? And
why are we here and where are we going?
Yeah. And you know what? I think when we let go of that question and just live, we find the answer, because the answer to it lies in living. Because you can't explain God, but you can feel God in your heart. You can feel love in your heart. You can't explain that to anyone. You know, these moments of pure magic that spring into our lives, these moments of serendipity or coincidence or aha moments, they're God moments, and they come to all of us, mostly when we're not expecting them. And you can't put a mathematical formula around it.
No.
Because we just can't. And once we stop searching, I'm kind of listening to these words and I'm kind of pointing to myself when I'm saying it, because I'm a seeker like most people in my field, like yourself probably. You mm-hmm. know, we're all searching for answers. But I tell you now, it's the minute we stop, it comes to us. And we go, there it is. There's no need to put a label around it. There's no need to try and diagnose it or analyze it. It just is, And I think that's the beauty of life. Because you know what? If we did know the answer, I think it would get quite boring. And life is far from boring, huh?
It is indeed. We're going to take a break here and let you listen to a few interesting announcements that we have available for you. We're talking with Dee Delaney, and she is sharing with us her insights into her three-part, I'll call it a trilogy, on the truth. And we're going to find out more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we ask you to stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we are talking, of course, as you've been listening, to Dee Delaney, all the way from India. And if I am correct, is it Goa, India?
Goa. I live in South Goa, a little fishing village in South Goa in India, right down in the southern bit of India.
I live in a little fishing village called Santa Barbara, California. So there you go.
I know. Slightly different, huh?
This is, to me, fascinating because this encompasses, even though this is dealing with your personal experiences over the last few years or many years, it's actually at the core of, quite honestly, of yes, the questions that we are all trying to find answers to. And you made an interesting comment about the mystery. And someone said to me, probably when I was in my 20s, you know, you ought to leave some of those questions for the next the next existence, whatever that happens to be, because you find out everything and then you got nothing to do in the next life, so to speak. But at the same time, there is a part of us that honestly that already knows.
Yeah.
And already knows the answers.
Yeah, it's our higher self. So our higher self has the answer. But to listen to the higher self, we need to still the mind, mm-hmm. and we need to still the body, and we need to sit in the silence to hear the sound of our soul. And when we stop, and when we give space for the voice to come in, the inner voice, your higher self, then they talk to us. And this is what happened to me when I came to India. I used to live in St. Albans, which is probably, if you imagine America and a suburb of New York, quite an affluent area. I was a big executive at the BBC and I was doing, running on adrenaline, you know, driven by ambition and goals, you know, with a tick list the size of my arm and ticking them all off. And after my husband died, I thought, I can't, I'm getting no pleasure out of pushing and doing. So when I came to India, I stopped. I actually stopped doing, and I gave myself a year to do nothing other than listen to the sound of my soul. Mm. And for me, as a woman, I'm approaching 50 next year. And as a woman growing up, I like to call me the Sex and the City generation. We're a generation of women who have been so driven to have everything, to be wives, mothers, career women, Michelin star chefs, you know, running around. I mean, literally exhausting ourselves. I became quite masculine in my approach to life. And when I came to India, Mother India, and Goa in particular, there is some magic in this soil that brought the feminine aspect of my being back into balance. So I came into my heart. And when I came into my heart space, that's when I heard the voice of my higher self. And she talked to me every day on the beach. She told me the stories to write. So it was the most beautiful process that happened when I was writing these books. And I say to anybody and who when they meet me and they read my books, they go, wow, where did that come from? And I go, wasn't me, it was her out there. It was this divine goddess who was writing these words for me because I stopped pushing and doing and started to be. And I think that's what, you know, I love the tagline for your show, The New Paradigm for a New World. And that is the new world. The new world is a world of being, not a world of doing. A new world is a balanced world where we soften and stop striving to achieve, and when we allow the grace to come to us, oh my God, that what we receive is so much greater than we can ever imagine.
There is an attribute, I will call it that anyway, of our lives that many people find a lot of difficulty in incorporating because it requires them to, you know, quite honestly, it requires them to humble themselves. And that attribute is the attribute of forgiveness. Talk to us about that, because you use the word grace, and I know that that's one of the elements there.
Yeah, well, forgiveness. So my story, so it's a three-part story, and book one leads on to book two, which leads on to book three, and book three, unbeknown to me, is the story of Jesus and Mary Magdalena. I had no idea this was coming. None of this. It's all been guided. And of course, Jesus is the epitome of forgiveness and compassion. But what he stands for, compassion means shared suffering. The literal translation in Latin from the original com is shared. Passion means suffering, shared suffering. So I, and my full name actually is Dolores. And I realized when I came to my third book that, and Dolores means Mary, the mother who takes away all your sorrows. And the road that Jesus walked on is called the Via del Dolores, the way of the grief. And it means when we stop and find forgiveness for ourselves and for others, our hearts open to this new space where we don't want to suffer, but we share and feel the suffering in others. And I think that's the bit that we miss when we see Jesus on the cross. You know, people see that as a sufferance, but actually I think it was a sign of compassion, because he's saying to us that the pathway to love is through compassion for others and ourselves. And it's, you know, but also what I feel is that, and I feel there's this massive shift that we've lived under this paradigm of we must suffer to survive and to grow, you know, Tibetan, you know, life is suffering, the Buddha, life is suffering. You know, when we transcend and we're no longer attached to our desires, we will no longer suffering, and then life is no longer suffering, you know. But I don't believe that has to be anymore. I really don't believe that has to be. I think our kids and this new wave of children and ourselves, we're getting rid, we're forgiving ourselves for buying into this story that we have to suffer. Because I don't think we have to. I really don't. I think we need to let go of all these stories and just live in grace and kindness and joy and start to feel, you know, if it doesn't give me joy and peace, then I don't need this in my life. But we don't need to stick with suffering as a way to enlightenment. I'm really struggling with that as a concept. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I am struggling with the whole duality concept because when you look out into the cosmos, all right, and you see, you have a telescope that's looking out there, or you have Voyager 1 or 2 or whatever the spacecraft is, and it's taking movies of what's going on out there, and you see things hurtling through space, okay?
Yeah.
And things collide together, all right? As they are bound to do, in spite of all of the open space there is between all of these physical pieces of matter, every once in a while, they line up perfectly and then, bam, they just collide together and explode and this and that and the other. Which, of course, some would say is sort of the process of the universe expanding and growing and so forth. But there's no judgment there. All right. Unless, of course, there's something hurtling towards the planet we happen to be sitting on. And now, oh, my God, it's terrible. We're going to all die. It's like, wait a minute. But you just saw those two items way out there colliding and you didn't even bat an eye. It was no big deal to you. Now, all of the sudden, you're worried. The duality concept, from my perspective, as the Hindu philosophy teaches about Maya, the illusion. Okay.
Yeah.
Even the delusion, if you will. The whole dualistic concept And I put it this way. You know, here in America, we have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We talk a lot here in this country, and I know in the UK especially, I don't know so much about India, talking about, of course, privacy, and, you know, we have rights to this and that and the other. And the one thing that comes to my mind, and again, I mean, no disrespect to anybody's belief and patriotism, whatever country they're from, but these constructs of liberty and freedom and privacy, they're irrelevant to the spiritual life that we're living. So the duality in this world is just as irrelevant. I don't know about you and your personal philosophy, and I'd love to hear about it, but from my perspective, and I'm not saying I've got this down yet, I'm still working on it, and they say that only those who have passed on have gotten it. In other words, you don't have to stay. If you've passed the test, you don't need to stay here anymore, right?
No, but, yeah, true.
But the concept is that we're taught in a lot of the ancient wisdom teachings that you need to take a balanced view of the, we'll use the word challenges in our lives, okay? Those things that may cause stress and so forth. Well, to alleviate the stress, what you do is you don't look at it as a calamity, a catastrophe, anything negative, right? Well, then the same position must also be taken for the miracles, the majestic things that happen in your life. You cannot take a joyous, happy, exuberant position when you are given $1 million or a mansion or a car or the most beautiful or lovely person to be in your life and children and on and on and on. And it's not to say that you become an automaton, but you aren't swayed by those things because those are just the natural order of existence, right?
Yeah. I think when you walk a spiritual path, that's really interesting you say that, because it is a natural order. And this kind of, often our tutors and our mentors have been the renunciates, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
The gurus who sit in the cave and have, you know, have given up their life or have taken on the cloth, and like the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu and all these, Mother Teresa and all these amazing people, and Jesus to some degree. But I think we are a new wave. We are the ones who are saying, I'm living with you in the world. I'm not separating spirituality and life. It's one and all. And therefore, we can live and breathe, but have the wife and the fine trappings, and that's all okay too.
Mm-hmm.
I call myself a shameless middle class hippie, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Because do you know why? You know why I'm writing my books? I'm writing my books because they're healing my soul,
mm-hmm,
first and foremost. And then I'm sharing my story because I'm kind of channeling a healing light that I know will be of service to others. And third, you know what? I want the wealth and the money to be in my hand so I can give to others. Much rather they come to me, someone with a big heart that wants to share and be generous. And this is how I think we evolve. And, you know, if we all take this stance and give and share, then there is no suffering on this world because we equalize it, you know. Let's start, walk the talk. And for me, this is such a profound thing, to walk the talk. And it is a challenge also in everyday life. You know, in some aspects of my life, I'm not so good at walking the talk. I kind of put my hand up and say, yes, I am human still, you know. But in most of my life, I kind of live by my honor, you know. And if I'm writing about sharing and giving and us all being in it together, then I must live that truth, and I must, you know, operate in a way where I lead by example. And I think that's what's changing. I think we're coming from this capitalist function and model. I see it a lot in where I live in India. There's many, many families coming now. to live where we live in our little community, who are not walking away from the Western capitalist life, but kind of want to come back to a simple way of being. And they still have their nice lives and theirs, but by simple, it's more of a community-minded way of being where we share. And that's beautiful. And I think that's kind of what we've lost. We've become kind of divided in our big concrete towers and our big houses. And, you know, the wealth is me, me, me. And I think we now realize that's not good for anybody. It's not good for the shareholder. They just are depressed and want more. They never seem to be an endless satisfying to their greed. And it's not good for anybody else. So I really, I just have this profound belief that we're shifting and it's happening now. And I think, you know, the world is, we've got to go through a little bit of pain, but this, the world's going to be a much better place for it. Don't you think?
I would agree. I honestly would. And that, of course, there are going to be those who are going to struggle with this whole concept because they're saying, well, but look what, for example, here in the States, and of course, you've obviously, you're aware of what's happened over the last couple, 3 years in our country as far as our government and so forth. And there are people who are going, you've got to be crazy. Look at what this guy is doing. Look at what's happening and on and on and on. And they just get really wound up. And I have to say that, and I've shared this before on the program too, that up until September of 2016, I didn't care. I honestly didn't care. And all of a sudden I got sucked in. I got sucked into that quagmire, right? And it took me six months to get unsucked, okay? And I had to go through...
You know, I used to work for the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company in the UK. So I worked in the media for 14 years in radio and in television. I no longer watch the media. I've deliberately... I don't have a television. I don't tune into the radio. And it's not because I don't love and I don't care. It's because I will not feed the, quite frankly, the lies and the agendas that are spewed out on these airwaves to frighten people. Really and truly, it's dreadful. And then people say to me, well, how can you not know? And I said, well, I know what's going on in the world around me because I sense and feel what's going on. And I can feel when stuff's coming by tuning into the different emotional, you know, and different senses. And I can go, ooh. And I'm not political in any sense because I don't feel it does me or the world any good to even talk about that side of life. If we just cut it off and everybody turned to, okay, they'll crumble. You know, it's just an energy, you know, going back to sort of the, you know, the science side of things. When we stop giving energy and voice to these things that we don't want, they go away.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
absolutely. They go away.
Yeah. Well, the two phases that I had to go through in 2017, and it was probably March or April when I was able to utter these words out loud. Thank you, teacher, because I didn't want to use the word teacher, but thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I do not want to behave. That was phase one. The second phase was, I forgive you, but more importantly, and this is why I asked you about forgiveness, more importantly, I forgive me.
Yeah. So I'm going to say to that, everything that comes to you and to your experience comes from you. So, and that's a really tough one to grab, but let me explain. It's that if we didn't have within our being anger and jealousy and hatred and lies and betrayal or whatever, these experiences cannot come to us, because what they do is they come to teach us. Every person, every situation that comes into our experience comes to teach us something that is deep within our souls and our past lives and our subconscious selves that is calling to be healed. We are mirrors. We reflect back to each other what lies within and what is calling to be healed. That is the gift of life on earth. everybody that comes to us comes to teach us something. And so when I'm met with anger, I kind of go, whoa, that's anger. Oh, I don't do anger. Of course I do anger. I'm a human being. I have every emotion. Mm-hmm. But what it tells me is I have suppressed anger that needs to rise to be transmuted to love so it no longer exists.
Yeah.
Once I do that within myself, anger won't come to me. The person who brought me the anger will either change or they will leave from my experience. And that's how life is.
Exactly.
You know, and it is such a profound lesson. And I've learned these lessons kind of the hard way because I'm a warrior and I don't want to do it the hard way anymore, but I have learned it the hard way. Mine has normally been through the men in my life. After my husband died, I had this moment of awakening when I became one and I felt it and I saw it. And it was a time in my life when I just read Gabrielle Bernstein's May Course Miracles, which is based on A Course in Miracles. And I did a 1 month course through her book and a 1 month sobriety. And at the end of that, I had my moment of light, if you like. And after that time, everyone who came into my world became my teacher, from my son to my partner to my girlfriends to my father. I mean, everybody. Mm-hmm. And I could only see in them what I needed to learn for myself to evolve. And I like to say to people, when you point one finger at that person and said, he did that to me, there's always three fingers pointing back at you.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
That's karma. So when you're blaming someone else, you hurt me, you did that to me, it's you who needs to take the lesson, not them.
Yeah.
And well, we are so, you know, we're so used to looking at others for excuses. And it's quite hard. I mean, you know, it's quite a hard way to live until you become comfortable at that process, because you start to question what's mine and what's yours. You know, I don't know whether you've come to that, you know, well, hold on, is this projection or is this really me? Is this, what is it? Is it you or is it me? And where's the boundary?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it becomes a dance.
Right.
Until one day it doesn't matter, because you're not attached to whatever is out there.
Yeah.
You know, you can throw mud at me. You cannot hurt me. You know, you're that strong and that evolved in yourself that it doesn't matter if someone is lying about you or cussing you or throwing mud at you. They can't hurt you because you are you, and your strength comes from within and from nowhere else.
Yeah. Here's an interesting irony. When I first moved to Santa Barbara, and obviously California, you know, not experiencing this kind of driving, the way that people drive in this state, not to say that Arizona isn't that much different. I would probably say that with all the freeways in Phoenix, as they began to grow, as I began to get ready to leave, I was pretty crazy there too. But as I lived here and drove here, I would get more and more frustrated at, this is the way I would phrase it, at the stupid things that people are doing. And I would get really irritated, and I'd honk my horn and I'd flash my lights and going off like that. Not actually road rage, but just, you know, that frustration. And one day someone said to me, and this is where the double-edged sword or the irony comes in, they said to me, well, Richard, what you don't understand, what you need to understand is that they didn't wake up this morning saying, let's get Richard. This isn't anything personal. Now, on the one hand, that was, okay, I get it. It's not personal. But on the other hand, it's, what do you mean it's not personal? You mean they don't care enough about me that they, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, do you want them to take it? Do you want it to be personal? You want them to get up and say, let's get Richard today. And so when I was able to let go of that and say, you know, it isn't personal, they're just trying to get from point A to point B. They're dealing with their own challenges, their own struggles, their own life events, just like I let it go. And in November of 2018, I was involved in a car accident. No one was hurt. Mm. No one was hurt. It was actually what I would consider minor, except that my car ended up being totaled. It was declared a total loss because it's an older vehicle. And to find the parts for this vehicle would just have been astronomical. But here's what happened. the difference between the before and after, all right? I've been here for 13 years. My blood pressure is on the high side. And so I'm taking a med for it to help to keep it level. I'm doing what I can to, again, find that equilibrium, that equanimity in life so that I don't start saying to this person and that person, blah, 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 blah. But this particular accident that happened, and it was actually on the 7th of November, this gentleman was pulling out heads first into the street, and I was oncoming traffic. And I saw him coming out, but I was traveling at such a rate of speed that all I could do was swerve and slow my car. Well, it didn't help that much because we still collided. Yeah. And at first, I was, you know, how you get in a situation like that and you're all shaken up, you know, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I'm going, and I started to make the phone calls. I called the police, then I called my insurance company, then I called my wife. Now, this gentleman, he and I were the sole occupants of our vehicles. He had, I guess it was either his girlfriend, his partner, his wife, I don't know what. But she was on the phone also doing the same thing I was doing. And she was the epitome of calmness, just like a smooth, clear lake. You know, you can see a reflection. And that's how calm this woman was. When I called my wife to tell her that I was okay and I was involved in an accident, she also was the same. Then when the police officer showed up, it was like, here's the Trinity. And he also was not only the epitome of calmness, but trying to keep things light. You know, he told me he'd been doing doing street patrols and so forth for 2 years and da 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 da. And when we got to the point where we were about ready to go our separate ways, I had this prompting. Now, I don't know about you and your intuition, but and I still struggle with it, and maybe you do too, in terms of you hear the voice, you've been given instruction, but it's like, I don't know, that just, I'm well, the prompting
I'll go the other way.
Yeah, I'll go the other way. Well, my prompting was, you need to go up to this gentleman in front of the police officer, you need to extend your hand, and you need to say, first of all, I'm glad that we're both okay. Now go and make it a better day than right now, because I'm going to. And I did just that. And he was standing there initially with his arms crossed in front. He was not looking real happy. And when I extended my hand and said that, he laughed a little bit. He shook my hand. And it was like one of the elements after the fact that I realized why I had done that, or why I was prompted, was this is a small town. I may come across this gentleman somewhere down the road.
Yeah,
and I don't need this kind of aggressive, angry, frustrated energy to follow him or me into our next encounter. So, you know, that's the process that I had gone through. And that's how far I've come so far in 13 years of living here. Yeah. Have I got it mastered? I don't know, but at least I know the techniques.
Ram Dass always says, I love it, he always says, if you think you're enlightened, just spend a weekend with your family and you'll soon know you're not. And that always makes me giggle. There's kind of two things I want to say to that. Is acceptance comes when we see ourselves in every situation. You know, with your crash, you know, you could accept what happened because you don't know what the guy was going through. You know, it was just, you just, okay, the car's crashed. He's having a bad day. You're having, but there's no point in blaming. You deal with it. Mm-hmm. You get through it. You deal with it with grace. You know, you could, there's two ways of dealing with it, isn't it? You could be angry and fed up and sling accusations and get furious, or you can be graceful. It's a choice. You know, the outcome will be the same. You just won't exert a lot of pressure and fury and get yourself all riled up.
Exactly.
You know, and there's that other thing, you know, that Ram Dass thing is, you know, which comes to, you know, it's a small town and I might bump into myself. You know, it's, and this is something I really struggle with and it makes me sad, is we don't seem to be that nice to the people we love the most.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You know, and this makes me really sad, like our children, our parents, our mothers and fathers, our brothers and sisters, our lovers, our husbands and wives, they kind of don't get the best of us. And my friend always says, her father and her clash quite a lot, and her father says to her a great line. He says, "Gwenny, darling, treat me as if you've never met me before and I'm a stranger."
Mm.
You know, because we hold on to so many stories and we're attached to these stories with our loved ones and our families. And because of that, there's anger and there's bitterness and there's all the stuff that comes with the stories that keep us tied to not loving them in the fullest of way.
Yeah.
And that makes me really, really sad. And I struggle with that the whole time because I see it playing out in my life and I see it playing out in everyone else's lives around me. And that, it just doesn't make sense, does it?
No. No, it does not. And I will tell you that the outcome of this whole thing, starting with November 7th, for several years, my wife and I, we have been talking about, you know, purchasing a second vehicle and specifically a truck so that we could maybe get a travel trailer and start doing some camping and traveling and so forth and so on. You know, and I just wasn't seeing a way, but I said, yeah, I want to do that too. But you know what? We have to allow the universe to prepare a way. Now, would you think that a car accident would be the universe's way of making that happen? Well, initially, no. I didn't. Initially, I didn't. Now, what ended up happening, as I said, neither of us were injured in any way. I was shaken up, so there was a little emotional turmoil, but I was able to deal with that. So the aftermath is, or the upshot, if you will, after the car was totaled and the loan was paid off, I applied for a loan through the same financial institution, credit union, and we were able to buy a truck.
Wow.
And it's
so out of a car wreck, you got a truck. Huh?
Yeah. Now we still only have one vehicle, but we have the truck, and now we can do the next step with the travel trailer and so on and so forth. You just don't know. And this is one of the things that I was going to share, and I want to have you expound on this a little bit, if you can, from your experience. That still small voice, that intuition, all right? That higher self speaking to you. It's been my observation that it will never put you in harm's way, but it may challenge you.
Yeah.
What do you think about that theory?
I think I always say the universe, my universe, because we all have our own, huh?
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, you revolve around yours, I revolve my. My one's got a very warped sense of humor. And is absolutely bloody hilarious most of the time. Because when these things happen, like you with your car crash, and as a result, you get the car that you've been longing for. And when things like that happen in my life, I literally stand there raw laughing. And I
let's try. There we go.
Hello.
There we are.
Hello, there we are. You see, just as we're talking about the universe having a sense of humor, she cuts us off, huh?
Yes, but she let us connect again.
That's so beautifully poetic.
It actually is. It actually is.
I love it. And I love it. That's poetry in motion. So many, many, many things like that happen to me. When I think I'm going left, I'm sent right. And I have these, I kind of describe it as this kind of like, griping in my stomach. I can always feel the intuition and go, oh, this voice. And I can see it in some situations where I'll look at someone and I'll go, you're not meant to be here, run now. But of course, I go, no, the ego plays and I'm going to go this way. And I think you always know deep down. You always know when you need to leave a situation and move on, or when you need to stick with it. You feel it. And intuition, so what is intuition? Intuition is feelings. And it's taken me many, many years to get back in touch with my feelings. And I think for men, it's almost even harder, because men have had a lifetime of being suppressed when it comes to feeling the good and the bad, the soft stuff and the not so stuff. So how do we know when something's good for us and our intuition tells us to do this? It's because it feels good. If it brings you peace and joy, then go with it. If it feels wrong, then walk away. I mean, it's that cut and dry, isn't it?
It is. It actually is.
But to be in touch with our intuition is to be in touch with our feelings. And for most men, you're blocked at the heart chakra, which is the place where you feel. For women, as a collective consciousness, we're blocked at the throat chakra. We feel, but we can't express our feelings because we've had years of suppression, going back to the witch hunts and before. So as humanity as a whole, men are kind of revolving as the kind of numb in the feeling sense and awakening to the feeling heart, whereas women are feel the heart, but then they don't know how to say what they want. And I think that's where we're moving forwards, you know. Your heart never lies, ever. Mm. Ever, ever, ever. So when it feels good in your heart, then that's your inner voice squeezing you and saying, go for it. And if it doesn't feel good, that's your inner voice saying, run a mile.
Yeah, yeah. Well, two things. One, I've had those promptings where I was bicycling. I used to bicycle everywhere in Phoenix. And I was traveling down this one road and I got the prompting to turn. Okay, turn right at the next corner. And I'm just thinking, but I'm heading. This is a direct line to work. Why would? And I kept going straight. And I went a half a mile and the prompting got stronger and stronger, would not let go. So I turned around and I made that turn and I went up a block and then over and then back down and then on to work. And I wasn't late or anything. I don't know what I avoided. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what difference it actually made. Maybe it was just a test for all I know. But I did that. And at least that prompting went away. At least that feeling went away.
Mm. You know,
because I listened.
It's an interesting word you use, test. You know, the universe throws us these tests. Mm-hmm. And I was discussing this with a girlfriend. And she said, I don't believe the universe tests us at all. I think we're always exactly where we need to be for all the right reasons. You know, we have choices in every direction we go, but wherever we end up, it's always the right one because we need to be there, you know. And I think I quite like that notion, because I think if we go with this idea that the universe tests us, that has, for me, that has some negative feeling, because you could fail a test, huh? You know, and it could not, you know, it could be, a test feels like it's challenging you, it's pushing you, it's, but I, you know, I think if we go, you know, we're always doing what we should be doing, when we should be doing, and it all happens in divine timing. It's how we accept these moments, you know, is where we evolve, you know, like your car accident moment, you know, if you accept it with grace, you could be having the best day of your life. You could be sat there and it could not even float off your back, or you could have the worst day of your life. The choice is yours, really, isn't it? But the accident's happening whether you like it or not.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, and I I'm kind of moving away from the universe tests us and throws us these tests to life just is.
Yeah.
And it's ours to accept whatever comes to us in the moment. Mm-hmm. And however we meet it. And And sometimes we will meet it with anger. And I'd love to get your view on anger, because I go round in circles when it comes to anger. Because from a Zen Buddhist perspective, one would say, well, if you're angry, more anger, you attract the same thing, and more anger begets more anger, and you just get more angry and more angry and more angry. And whereas another view would be, it's much better. All emotions are valid, and it's okay to express anger. And rather than suppress anger, one must allow anger to flow, but then don't be attached to that flow of anger. Be angry and be done. What do you think on that?
I'm going to say yes, because here's, as a man, I have the frustration of dealing with my anger in the way that I do, which, when there are other people around, my wife included, they get scared. And they say, don't be angry, don't, you know. And I say, well, wait a minute. You know, if I was laughing and happy and having a great time, you wouldn't say anything about that. You might even join in. But when I am expressing these other parts of my humanity in, and at least a relatively socially acceptable way, where I'm not hurting others or myself, you know, I might smash something outside or in my studio, and of course I'll regret it later, but I didn't hurt myself or any other human being or another animal. And that's the struggle that I face sometimes. And I know that a lot of guys especially do. And actually, there's now the backlash with women, because now when you're talking about women in public life and political life and whatever, you know, everybody's now worried about, oh, my God, you know, if she's premenopausal, oh, my God, you know, every month for a week, she's going to be out there somewhere, you know, going nuts and she might push the button and blow us all up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a till of the heart.
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I think anger is a real cultural thing. And I hear exactly what you're saying, because, you know, my male partners, when they express anger as a woman, I don't know how to deal with it, because I think as women, we've not been allowed to be angry. We've been told to shut up and be quiet and seen and not heard, and we need to be delicate and soft. So, so when a man expresses anger, which is a very valid emotion, I think women are really uncomfortable around anger, because it tells us that we have suppressed anger that we need to release, but we've suppressed it, so we can't really, we don't know how to. But I think it's a cultural thing, because I have many Spanish and Italian friends here who they would say passion is anger and amore, and they argue and they raise their voices and they're like this, and it's like, whoa. But they let their anger flow as part of their daily conversation, you know, so it never builds up. Whereas I think if you were raised perhaps, you know, like yourself in the US and me in the UK, we were always raised in that, you know, small children need to be quiet and never express their anger. So I think we are the generation that have a lot of anger to express, but it's learning how to make it as part of our daily dialogue rather than these big explosions.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in fear, for example, or feeling depressed, you know, sad, you know, someone may come and try to console you. That's sort of a form of trying to have you suppress the sadness or the fear or the depression. And I've always heard the phrase that you have to go through it to get past it. You can't stop it. You can't, you know, then of course there are lots of comedies where I just stuff it down and just get it out of the way and wait for it to explode in other areas of my life later down the road. And that's exactly what will happen.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was talking was listening to satsang with Pooji Swamiji, who's an enlightened guru here in India, and his partner. And she was saying, the nun, she was saying, you know, just because we're in this place of being, you know, if you like, enlightened or very evolved, we still feel. we still feel emotions, and we feel love, and we feel anger, and we feel sorrow, and we feel, you know, everything in between. But what we do is we don't become attached to it. So we let it flow through us. We mm-hmm. observe it. We see it's coming, but we don't necessarily respond and react to it. And that's quite a nice way to be. It's almost like I think you get to a place where you feel it, but you don't almost need to vocalize it. Mm-hmm. It just becomes a burning, rising force. And then it comes out, I don't know how, but it doesn't necessarily comes out vocally. I don't know. I'm not at that place yet. I'm not. I'm not necessarily an angry person. So anger always surprises me when I'm met with it, because I go, "Wow, it's one of my. I don't like emotions, so I kind of run away from it."
Sure. Well, and the other thing too is that our emotions are energy, right? Regardless of what the emotion is, it's energy. All right. So when you express the what some will call the positive emotions, you're letting it out, you're having a great time, you're feeling wonderful, right? But boy, when you have those negative emotions, you don't want anybody to see, you know, you don't want to cry in front of other people, you don't want to be sad and this, all these different things, and you push it down and you, okay, I'm gonna suck it up, and I'm gonna man up, and I'm gonna get control and take care of things and so forth. And again, we see this time and time again in our society, where people will go through some very traumatic experiences. Matter of fact, I have to say that there are some television programs that I happen to watch, focusing on the medical community, the firefighters, and the police, first responders, we'll call them. And they go through some horrific experiences. And most of them are men. But when they go through these horrific experiences, the higher-ups will say, I want you to go see the psychologist, the fire department psychologist, the police department psychologist, hospital psychologist. I want you to talk with them about this so you work on that. Oh, no, I'm fine. I am just fine. And then down the road, they come unglued. Because they didn't release that frustration. I could have saved one more. I could have protected one more. So on and so forth. I could have run into that burning building and saved one more, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And they take that on. Now, what we are trying to learn to do is, let's just say in that situation where you're running into that building to save one more, and you don't. The way to, and I don't want to say avoid, but say not need a therapist or psychologist, is, and in that moment, similar to, I think, what I was doing in my car accident, you take on a different perspective. Yeah. I am a firefighter. My job is, I did the very best that I could with all of the training that I was given, and it wasn't my fault. I didn't start the fire, so on and so forth. And if we could ever find a place that we could find ourselves emotionally and mentally and even spiritually where we didn't generate those emotions, that perspective of, oh my God, what have I done? This person died because I couldn't get to them. We couldn't get to them because there was a burning wall of fire. It's not your fault. And so changing our perspective of those kinds of things, for me, with wildfires here in California over the last 13 years, I started out being fearful. I mean, like a chicken with its head cut off. Over the course of the years, more and more and more, over the course of the years, I shifted from fear to anger. But also, I was able to shift into my intellect and say, okay, I know who to call, I know what to do, and so I'm able to, you know, facilitate that. And the reason I get angry is because it's like, oh, great, here we go again. And it's not at anyone. It's like waiting for that other shoe to drop. That's where you're at all the time. And in the military, it's the same thing when you're out on deployment. you're waiting for the next, the other shoe to drop, or the next shoe to drop, so to speak. And that's no way to live. So we need to find ways to change our perspective, our, shall we say, reaction. Instead of reacting, we need to act. And if we act instead of react, then maybe we won't generate those energies within ourselves that are so self-destructive. And maybe that's a better way to put it.
Or what we do is we generate them in the moment and then they're gone.
And then they're gone.
And I think I think that's what I'm finding. I've known that, you know, approaching 50, I've had to process a lot of suppressed anger, you know, over the years. And it's mainly gone. And now when anger comes, it comes in the moment. I have my moment and then that's it. It's gone. And I think that's what comes with all things is they call it in shamanism. They call it the hollow bone. When you clear out all the chakras and you're no longer attached to past stories and negativity and behaviors and patterns. So you're literally a clear channel. Then things flow and move. And then you express your emotions pretty much in the moment. You deal with them. You observe them. You express them, then they're gone. Nothing sticks anymore. And I think that's where we're all working towards. Mm-hmm. Because then if nothing sticks, then you can't project onto others because you're a clear channel.
There you go.
And if you're a clear channel, it's just love and light inside there because that's what we're naturally made from.
Yeah. Well, I was taught in my Reiki master training that I am to be a conduit of the energy, that it's not coming from me. I allow it to flow through me.
Yeah.
Well, this emotional energy, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
That I'm a conduit, even of that energy that is actually coming from within myself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as you say, if we would learn to deal with it right then and there.
Yeah, that's the key. And that's how, when you observe small children, that's what they do. They have their tantrum and it's done. They don't worry about it 3 days down the line, do they? It's done. You know, that's why children are so sort of, you know, in touch with their source and life itself. You know, they're not burdened down by suffering or anxieties and pains. They're there. They deal with whatever comes, joy, sadness, tears, laughing, giggling, and then it's gone, you know. And I think that's where we're all trying to head back to, our childlike state. Yeah.
Did you ever think, with the experiences that you had with the three partners that you had, that maybe the universe was telling you not to have relationships?
Yeah, do you know what? Thank you for raising that, because that's a really, really valid thing. So, and it's what's going on in my mind right now. So I've always been a person who, from when I was a little girl, I always thought by the time I was 25, I'd be married, have a house, two kids, you know, what every little girl always dreams of.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I thought, you know, I'm just a normal girl from a normal town looking for a normal life. But now, fast forward, you know, so many years, and I'm actually coming to the conclusion that maybe that isn't my path. Maybe the universe is asking something different, and that maybe, you know, I'm meant to have small, lovely, beautiful relationships to teach me, or maybe I'm meant to be on my own, or maybe I'm meant to share my life another way. It's this whole convention about, you know, getting married, have kids, have the two, you know, we say in England, you get the house, the 2.2 kids and the Range Rover, you know, you have the package. And because I've stepped out of that, that conventional way of living into a completely non-conventional life, which is what I have on the beach in Goa, I've still been searching for a relationship which would fit the mold of what my dream used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not that girl anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a curious thing. And I wonder if that's ever meant to be, if I'm ever meant to have this happy ever after long-term partner that's meant to be there for me.
or at the same time.
I still don't have the answer to that one.
Right.
But it is a curious answer. I think there's something different meant for me, but I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. Well, there's another part to that too, and maybe that's also that the three relationships that you did have actually were designed actually to teach you so that you could teach others about existence.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure. You know, the second book is a book about, you know, the art of living through dying. So, and what I realized when I embarked on that book and I traveled around India and went up to Ladakh, which is where the Tibetans live, and learned from the Tibetans about the Bardo, which is the science of dying, the ancient science of dying that's been passed down through thousands of years. And then I trained to be a soul midwife in the UK, that I had this gift of being able to part the veils and pass people over, so, which has always been there my whole life. And if I'm honest, I think my whole life has been about coming to this point so I can write these stories. And I'll give you a for example. My third book is a book about the goddess, and it is In Search for the Holy Grail. But part of it, I look into the history of the hidden goddess, and I look into the archaeological sites. So I'm actually studying with Sacred Stories Media, and I'm doing a course with Tricia McGannon on the hidden histories of the goddess, and I'm going through it. It's an online course. And then I look at some of her research, and there is a site of a labyrinth, which is in Goa. And I'm kind of looking at it going, huh, I live in Goa. Huh, what are the coincidences? So I did this course in, you know, February, March of this year. But this kind of niggled me. Oh, there's a labyrinth, a goddess labyrinth in Goa. Why don't I know about it? Why don't I research it? So last week, I go and discover the goddess labyrinth, which is only 45 minutes away from where I live. And it's actually a rock carving in the rocks in the Western Ghats near where I live. And I arrive at these rock carvings to be met by a film crew, which is not uncommon in India, because India has the world's largest film industry, and they make something like 700 films and hundreds of documentaries. So I go over to the film crew and say, hi, you know, what are you making? And the director says, oh, we're filming a love story. It's India. Every story in India and out of Bollywood is a love story. And he introduces me to the two actresses. And then he introduces me to the lead. And he said, and this is Jesus, the reincarnation of Jesus. He's in India. And I look at him and I go, oh my God, I'm writing a book about Jesus and Mary Magdalena. I've studied about this labyrinth, and here I am, 9 months later, at the site, visiting the site of the labyrinth. And, you know, there is a Bollywood film crew filming a love story with the second coming of Jesus. I mean, what are the chances? And it was the most bizarre situation. And I walked to the labyrinth. I walked around the labyrinth 7 times. I stood in the epicenter. I opened my arms and my heart flew open, and I sobbed tears and tears and tears. And I just knew I was exactly where I was meant to be, right there, right then. Mm. None of it was planned. It was all guided, and it was all sent to me so I could write this book.
Mm. Well, I will share.
And that's how my life is, and that's how all three of my books have come to be in the world. None of them have been planned. They've all these beautiful, magical stories have been gifted to me through life itself.
Hmm. Well, I will share with you that I have actually repronounced the word coincidence, similar to how the British will repronounce laboratory and privacy and so forth.
Yeah.
I call them coincidences.
Insights is, yeah,
and
insights.
Because we have events that happen in our lives that coincide. There have been some television shows over the last decade or two that have actually touched upon that concept where you have multiple stories going on within this one program. And they're all independent of one another until their paths cross. And these people do not know one another from Adam. They've never seen them before, but suddenly their lives are intertwined and you have no idea. It's like this gentleman who he and I had this little car situation. I didn't know he even existed until that very moment. And then all of a sudden, look at what has happened. The coincidences.
Yeah.
And that's why it's fascinating. I encourage people, I want to let people know, first of all, we are talking with Dee Delaney, and she has a website. And the website is ddelaney.co.uk. We encourage you to go there. That's ddelaney.co.uk. And we want to thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program to share your thoughts. And I know there's a lot more that we could talk about. And I'd love to continue this conversation down the road later in 2019. And who knows, maybe if you happen to find yourself here on the west coast of the United States here in Santa Barbara, maybe we have you in studio and we can do just
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Do you know all of that? And thank you. It's like talking to a friend. Thank you so much. And, you know, I feel sometimes a little isolated in my bubble. The reason why I publish my books in America is I just find that there are so many more people who meet and a heart connection in America. So it's important. It's really special to me to be able to share my voice and to speak to you. And thank you so much for inviting me on. And I am definitely coming to the States.
Well, wonderful.
That's for sure.
We look forward to that. And also let our listeners know once again, ddelaney.co.uk. We will be linked to your website as well. And also a reminder to our listeners that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, this interview goes on much longer. We hope that you will go to the podcasts at either the homepage of richarddugan.com or the radio show's page, or SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher. Listen to the podcasts. You can download them and so forth. And also, if you'd like to support this radio broadcast, we are certainly open to that. We can use all the help that we can get to keep us moving forward. And we thank you, those who have supported us and those who will support us. I cannot thank you enough, those who have and will, for keeping us moving forward and feeling encouraged. I have to say that that's probably more important for me than anything else, is to feel encouraged that people care enough about what we're doing to support this. We have nothing to sell. All we do is offer these programs and the information from our guests, and we certainly hope that you will look into that as well. And before we let you go, Dee, I have three final questions for you that I ask all of my guests. You may have addressed them during the interview, but I want to ask them to you directly. And the first of these three questions is, who is Dee Delaney?
Oh, who is Dee Delaney? She is a simple woman and a being of light.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
First and foremost, I wanted to heal myself. And then through that experience, I wanted to share it with others. And one of the most beautiful, beautiful feedbacks that I've had consistently from book one, which has been out in the world since May, is that people who've read it kind of come up to me and say, oh my God, I feel myself in that story. So I kind of say on the back of the book, this is my story, but it's a universal tale. And this is unity consciousness in motion. When we can tap into that essence and bring that to a story, we can share it with others, and we can make that connection, then that's how one person can do the work, but we can all do the work. So, you know, that's what the books have been about, sharing with others to help others on their own journey.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life purpose is to be love. That's simple, huh? To be love.
Absolutely. Dee Delaney, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And sweet dreams as you go to bed, and we continue on our day. And maybe one of these days we'll cross time zones, and I'll be asking you what the day after today is like, so that we know what to expect.
I'm already in the day after today. So bless you. Thank you so much, Richard.
You are very
Cheerio.
Welcome. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.